Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things. We don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains, and it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook, and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves. As we are women, we are also caregivers. We are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. Today, we're going to be talking about pets. And you know, I never was a pet person until my daughter decided to get a pet, and I would say this is about 14 years ago. And I didn't grow up with pets, so I really had no connection. So I'm definitely a newbie to the block, but some people, you know, my husband, he's had cats his entire life, couldn't live without them, and is really missing them because they're no longer with us. We'll be talking about pet loss and about grief and all around all the stories about pets. My guest today is Russell Friedman, Executive Director of the Grief Recovery Institute, and he's also co-author of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. Russell, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, the pleasure right back at you. I'm very excited. I am much more connected to you and your show that you might know, and we've never talked about it before, but last year, for example, I was a keynote speaker at the Arizona Naturopathic Medical Association, and many years ago, I owned one of the first gourmet health food restaurants in Los Angeles, so I think we have a lot of connections to, and I'd like to help blend the idea of the positive impact of grief recovery, helping us make all the correct and holistic things we do, make them work better. Because while you can do a lot of wonderful things for yourself in food and in exercise and yoga and so on, if you don't deal with the buildup of energy caused by grief, you can actually sabotage your good work. So we don't want anybody to sabotage their results by not having a complete package to go forward with.
You know, Russell, that is so right on the money, which we will be speaking about going forth in 2016, is because all of these things that are going on in the world with the energy changes, with the way the economy is going, people are passing away much faster, the pets are leaving this earth by choice. There's so much going on. And then people are saying, well, I can't even get help and what they call it healthcare, but I call it rescue medicine, because really that's all healthcare is doing anymore. And when we really look at it, it's all around the whole picture, because if you have a daisy, you know, and each petal reflects a part of your life. Anytime they start to miss those little petals, a piece of your soul or your heart gets like what I always called the ding of the heart. And eventually you end up with an imbalanced flower. It tends to tip. It starts to brown. It starts to wilt. It doesn't take on nourishment as much. And really, I like to think about our bodies as that. And also in our association with pets, I mean, goodness, they're so vital to our existence.
Absolutely. And also, you know, just to piggyback on everything you were just saying, one of our little lines in grief recovery is that Unresolved grief drains energy and robs choice. Let me repeat that. Unresolved grief drains energy and robs choice. And you and I have known, and everyone listening will know, people who are almost perpetually exhausted, who can't, their get up and go is got up and went. They wake up tired. They wake up not refreshed. And a huge part of that inevitably involves the unresolved grief, which is working away 24/7. So while you're sleeping, you may not be resting well, because if you leave on things unfinished, they are going to get you. You must attend to all the things. You can't push them aside. You can't pray them away. You can't yoga them away. You must deal with them in a more direct fashion so that all the other things you do work better. So part of our job is to help people regain their energy and then be able to make better choices in their life, including in with our latest book, The Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. A tremendous amount of people, Dr. Jeanette, never get another pet after their pet dies because they don't know how to deal with their broken heart, don't want it broken again, so they rob themselves and a potential pet of the joy of that bond. And that's just heartbreak on top of heartbreak. And so part of one of the reasons I want to talk to you and your gathered people today is to help anyone who's struggling with grief and avoiding life because of it.
Well, you know, and we can look at this in many different realms too, because grief can be your own personal loss. Or grief could be for a business or a loss of a family member. Grief could be for a pet. Grief could also be things didn't work out the way you wanted them to. Grief could be, hey, my car didn't start and I lost my job. There's a lot of different types of grief in different aspects, and there's also a whole heck of a lot of PTSD that's just going on around. I mean, PTSD is no longer just for the military, as they say. You know, PTSD is almost what we would call that prolonged grief that just wants to seem, you know, I always like to say it seems like you're sitting in a swamp, you know, and your butt just isn't, and your butt just isn't going anywhere, you know? And people will say, my lower back hurts, my knees hurt. Of course they do, because you're stuck in the swamp, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are 43 different life events that can produce feelings of grief. You mentioned a bunch of them: personal, business, a job, career, health. But there are 43 different life events can produce feelings of grief. And PTSD is basically not a thing. It's the absence of recovery will create what allows PTSD to exist. Almost everyone I've ever seen who presented to me that they had PTSD, when we tracked it back, it was easy to discover that they never did anything to deal with the grief, therefore it got worse. It's kind of like if you get a cut and you don't clean it, you'll get an infected. Your cut will get infected. It's not an infected cut. It's a cut that becomes infected by lack of treatment. Same thing for what they call complicated grief or PTSD. If you don't treat your reaction to losses, they fester. They get bigger until they become something else, and then you're preoccupied with the thing it's become, and the underlying grief doesn't always get dealt with. My job is always to help people get back to the original underlying grief and work on it. And then all those other symptoms can either fritter away or can be dealt with effectively by any number of methods.
You know, and I think the biggest thing, too, even divorce can be grief and PTSD, you know. And I see so many people over the age of 50, if you ever ask them to sit down and tell you their story, they would have a lineage-long line of things that just, like, for lack of a better word, really PO'd them in their life, and they're just kind of carrying their baggage with it. And sometimes to be able to get healthier, you really have to turn around and say, can I go through that? And how do you go through it? You have got to go through it via being able to lighten your load, so to speak, being able to release some of that tension.
Absolutely. And, you know, divorce is right up there. When we, the subtitle of our first book, The Grief Recovery Handbook, is The Action Program for Dealing with Death, Divorce, and other losses, including loss of health, loss of career, and loss of faith. But and oddly enough, we don't segregate losses. We don't make death a special category and divorce a special mm-hmm. category. All losses are together because our reaction to them is 100%. There's no half grievers. We never compare losses. And in fairness, a divorce is the death of a relationship, isn't it? It's the death of hopes, dreams, and expectations about the future. So the method that we teach that works on pet loss also works on divorce, also works on death of a human, also works on career, health, and faith things, because the method never changes. I was doing an interview last week, and I brought up this question. Everyone's heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people go there to deal specifically with drinking issues or drug issues. And I asked this question: is there a different program for people whose drug of choice was vodka compared to people whose drug of choice was scotch? And the point is, the 12 steps of AA work exactly the same for a vodka drinker as a scotch drinker. Well, the method, grief recovery method for pet loss or for death or for divorce, is the same set of actions. It doesn't require a new program. It means doing the actions that help you discover everything you wish had been different, better, or more, and all the unrealized hopes, dreams, and expectations about the future. And that's what we help people do. We also have to help them, and you'll love this, Dr. Jeanette, we have to help people move about 14 inches from their head to their heart. I have personally talked to 100,000 grieving people over the last 28 years, and I'm not talking about on radio or TV. I'm talking in person, on the phone, or in real time. And I absolutely guarantee you that not one of them ever called here and said, I'm dealing with a broken head. They all
That's
were
right.
dealing with a broken heart.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this is beginning to be an escalation in the world of broken hearts. I don't know how many times I hear people that call me and they'll say so-and-so has a heart condition. Even just yesterday, I heard someone sent me an email, and they said a husband and wife, they both need heart transplants. And I'm going, how unique. They're both, cohabitating because they really wanted each other to fix their broken hearts, but it didn't happen. So now here they are, both cohabitating, trying to find how to fix those broken hearts. And that's, you know, that is such a tough place to be. Well, let's talk a little bit about pet loss. Now, when we say pet loss, it does not always have to be by the event of the pet passing on. It could be the pet could be lost. The pet, you could be abandoned. The pet could be gone by divorce. The pet could be, I mean, I live in New Orleans. We had all those hurricanes. And if you look at it, you know, pets were lost. So there's a lot of grief in almost every one of those instances, right?
Oh, absolutely. This is a bigger topic all of itself. The amount of people who, for example, get a new job. And in the new job, they have to move to a new city. And then they have to live in an apartment. And the apartments don't take dogs, not all of them, or cats or whatever.
Right.
So there's an awful lot of people who have to give up their pet. Hopefully, most of them don't have the pet euthanized, but they struggle to find a home for their dogs or cats or even horse pets. But they are still brokenhearted. You have a bond with your pet. That is a unique bond. It's different than your bonds with humans. The phrase unconditional love is used an awful lot in our human-animal relationships. I tend to agree with that idea, although we always have to be careful with the phrase unconditional love. There probably is no such actual thing because there are always conditions, whether between you and me as humans, where there will be little hooks. You know, our friendship depends on each of us doing various things. Well, with a pet, you do have to feed them and house them and care for them. So there's some conditions within it. But the pet never said you were fat, ugly, or stupid. The pet is the safest place for you to talk about how you feel. When I struggle with my spouse, which fortunately isn't often, but, you know, look, we're two people. We can butt heads. Then I go out with my dog, we go down to the park, and he runs around, and then we hang out, he and I tell him everything. He's the only entity on earth that knows everything about me. I never have to withhold any of my intimate truth. And he always thinks what I'm saying is perfect. He wags his tail. He says, that's great, Pop. Let's go have some lunch. You know, he thinks food is the answer to everything. And I also, he is also the source of my favorite prayer, which is, Lord, please let me be half the man my dog thinks I am. but I have a relationship with him. Now, he allows me to open my heart in a way that I can't, you know, I would love to do it. I do as much as I can talking to you today and your audience. I do as much as I can with my family. But with the dog, I can do, I can be everything. And it helps point me towards my heart and soul in a different way than anything else does. And so if I or anyone else has to give up their pet because of circumstances where they can't have one, that's as heartbreaking in its own way as death. It's different, but it's still a heartbreak. If you take away my physical connection to my pet, even though I might still have an emotional and spiritual one if they move or even if they die, the physical is powerful, the loss of it. So I agree with you 1,000%. No matter the reason, if we have to give up a pet or if our pet dies, and whether we've had the pet for the long lifespan, that the, whatever their lifespan might be, or if we only had it short term, we develop very powerful relationships with our pets very quickly. I have people call me whose pet was 4 or 5 or 6 months old, and they're as devastated as they can be, 100% crushed by it. And it wasn't a long relationship, but it was incredibly intense and powerful.
You know, anytime you can establish a connection with another energy that's able to touch your heart, spirit, and soul, that's really what it's, the world is all about. I mean, when you look at pets, you know, because with people, there's so much judging. People judge with their eyes. They judge with their body language. They judge with their movements. They judge with their words. You know, they even judge with their touch. You can, you know, shake the hand of someone and you know that they're holding back. You know that they either don't want to shake your hand or that, you know, or many different things. But with a pet, there's really no boundaries. It's limitless, I like to say. So really, you know, that is probably, that's the best thing you're looking for. Here comes in another.
I agree 100%. I have nothing to add to what you've said. It says it all. It is 100% true.
But here's the complication, is that when people have these connections with these pets and then something happens, then they're trying to find that same connection in a human being. And they will always unbearably be disappointed because they believe that humans and pets are the same. While they're similar, they are not, in some people's minds, the same. Because it's hard to find humans who are limitless, right?
Well, absolutely. I agree with that, but it also brings up another powerful point. Of all the comments grieving pet owners hear, one is the famous one that says, don't feel bad, on Saturday you can get a new dog, or replace the loss. Now, so let's talk about that for a minute. All relationships are unique. There are no exceptions. Whether I have a relationship with a dog, a cat, or a horse, whether I have a relationship with a wife, a brother, a sister, or a friend, every relationship is different or unique. If you and I are a couple and we have a dog or a cat, you and I will each have different relationship to that pet because you are different and relationships are different. So getting another dog or cat or it doesn't work because if you do it too soon without getting complete with the one who died, then you will try to make the new pet be what the old pet was. You will rob it of its individuality and uniqueness and so on. Now, so even if you stay in the same species, dog to dog, it isn't replaceable. And then, as you say, if you try to replace your relationship with your dog with your relationship with another human being, it doesn't make sense anyway because species notwithstanding, it's the uniqueness. And what we grieve is for the uniqueness of the one-of-a-kind relationship we had with our unique pet who died, okay, regardless of the breed, regardless of the type. And, look, I happen to be breed-centric. My dog is a Hungarian Vizsla. My dog who died, who's featured in the book, Buddha, was also Hungarian Vizsla. But the two dogs, Baxter, my current dog, and Buddha, who died, are so different in personality, they might as well be from different planets, yet physically, they look very similar. So it just reminds us, even if you I have twin sisters, by the way. They are identical twins. And, you know, that's one egg. DNA is the same. And yet when our mother died suddenly 20 years ago, they each had massively different emotional reactions because as similar as they are as identical twins is as different as they are emotionally. They are totally different personas emotionally. And when I'm talking with one, my sister Patty's like me. You say hello and she cries. I'm very sensitive, very emotional. My sister Margie, you got to kind of hit her with a bat to get her attention. It doesn't mean she doesn't feel. It's just she presents herself differently. And so it's always good to remember the uniqueness. And here's one of the reasons, and I want everyone listening to hear this, especially if they're not pet owners or pet lovers. In trying to soothe and help our friends, we often say very, very bad or incorrect things. And the number one incorrect thing that grieving pet owners hear, as well as other grievers, is, I know how you feel. Mm-hmm. And what the griever wants to say to you is, scream is, no, you don't. And you don't know how someone else feels, because even if you had a parallel experience, it is different. And you rob them of dignity, Dr. Jeanette, by saying, I know how you feel, because it's so personal. My relationship with my dog was so personal, very different from my wife's relationship with our dog who died. You know, and it's the same thing. If a couple has a child die, they each had a different relationship, and they don't actually know how each other feels. I can tell you how I feel. You can hear me, but you can't know how I feel. And so we want everyone to be careful with the phrase, I know how you feel. What we'd rather say, I hear you loud and clear. I can relate to what you're saying, but never say, I know how you feel. It will cause them to isolate because they want it. They'll want to say, no, you don't. But they'll be polite, and they'll just kind of move away from you. So I hope everybody hears that bit of guidance.
You know, I find that also with human beings, you know. Everybody walks around saying things like that very similarly. And also their biggest phrase is, sorry for your loss. But really, and then you want to turn around to them and say, what are you sorry for? You're not sorry. Why did you say that, you know?
Exactly. Now, you have nailed it. I got to tell you something fascinating. A couple of years ago, I was reading a murder mystery, and I come to page 29, and it's like it takes place in Ireland. An Irish cop and this guy is talking to him, and the one guy says to the other, so-and-so died. And the other guy says, I'm sorry. And the first guy says, why? You didn't know him.
Yeah. Right.
Which is saying here.
Yeah, and it's
I'll
just
tell you
incredible.
What I did. It's amazing. I turned over that page on the book, and it took me a couple of days, but I did some research, and I found the writer who lives in Galway, Ireland. He's a well-known murder mystery writer, and he and I became fast friends. He's the first person I've ever seen who understood it. You're the second. You go, you know, you don't. Why are you saying sorry? What are you sorry for? And it really is off-putting for the griever. And yet, here's the deal. Everybody who says that is trying to be helpful, soothing, comforting to the griever, and what they do is they're off-putting because it doesn't make sense. And the griever has like antenna, like little insects. They're very alert to things that don't sound or feel right. They're hyper-aware of both verbal and nonverbal communication, the grievers. So it's funny. I often do speeches, and I'll spend a whole hour talking about what to say and not say to grieving people. Mm-hmm. And all of it is rational and reasonable stuff, but most of us were taught, you know, we heard stuff like, don't feel bad, tomorrow's another day, or don't feel bad, God won't give you more than you can handle, which is said to people who are drowning in grief when they can't handle it. And yet, don't feel bad. By the way, as I'm sure you know from either reading or scanning the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, the opening chapter is entitled, don't feel bad, it was only a dot, dot, dot. And that's where you put in dog, cat, horse, parrot, whatever animal that died. And what we want everybody here, when you say to someone who does feel bad, don't feel bad, basically you're telling them they're stupid or defective for feeling bad. And then you compound the mistake by saying it was only a dog, thereby dismissing this heartfelt bond they had with this entity that was their dog, cat, or horse. And on that same first page of the book, Dr. Jeanette, we asked this question. If your mother died and someone said, don't feel bad, it was only a woman, I mean, be righteously homicidal. If someone said, don't feel bad, it was only a mother, when your mother died? It would be, huh? Right. And yet when you have your pet who represents your heart, don't feel bad, it was only a dog, which is just no wonder grieving pet owners isolate because they hear that stuff all the time.
Yeah, and you know, all the time, you know, even with humans, they say at the end, oh, well, she lived a full life. And it's like, and, you know, I really, my biggest thing going forward, 2016, is changing language. And my one big thing about round grief is don't talk. Because what you're doing, when you don't speak right when someone is sharing with you, you're allowing their vulnerability to come as close to you as humanly possible. And just being present and accepting of that. You know, in other words, let's just let that flow. Because in that flow, you're allowing it and it doesn't get pent up in them. But that is like the most crucial thing. Because anytime you just open your mouth, I can guarantee you what you get is this big metal door that slams down between you. And you don't want to hear their story. You don't want to hear their whining and tears. You don't want to hear their grief. And that's exactly what keeps them stuck. So why can't you just allow them that vulnerability? I don't get it.
Absolutely. And I agree to the greatest extent, but I'd like to put some little codicils on. I'd like to amend what you said just a little bit. First of all, let's start with this. Grieving people need and want an opportunity to talk about what happened and their relationship right. with the entity it happened with. So it's not that they don't want or need that, but it's because, as you are indicating so clearly, the vast majority of things they hear are off-putting to them, which make them want to mm-hmm. run away or slash out at you. So what you need to do is to learn two little phrases I can teach everybody, and they're in our books too. So let's say I know you and I know your cat died and I bump into you in the mall and, you know, we're in the private. I say, oh, hi, I heard what happened and I can't imagine what this has been like for you. And by what I'm doing there is opening up a conversation that you may or may not want to jump in. But what I didn't say, imagine I said, oh, I heard what happened and how are you feeling? At that point, you say, you idiot, how do you think I'm feeling? My heart and soul died. We never ask right. people how they feel. It exposes them to thinking you're going to judge them if they say they feel bad. On the other mm-hmm. hand, when I say, I can't imagine what this has been like for you, what I'm inviting right. them to do is to tell me how they feel. And the word imagine, Dr. Jeanette, is open-ended, non-judgmental. Basically, it says, I will listen to you without judgment or negative comment. I will listen to your heart, okay? Why it works that way, I don't know. I can tell you it does. It never backfires. However, if you say, I can't imagine what this has been like for you, you got to make sure you back it up by not judging. And just you can use your body, put your hand on your, oh, yeah, I imagine. Oh, wow, how heartbreaking mm-hmm. for you. Oh, my gosh. You can paraphrase what they say back to you. Never argue with them and never judge them, and you will be their favorite person. Now, the second thing to say to people involves a question that's like this. Is there a correct thing to say to a griever? And the answer is no. There is no piece of language that is mm-hmm. so perfect that everyone will react to it benignly, every griever. So I could do like this. I heard what happened, Jeanette, and honestly, I don't know what to say to you. And if you say that to a griever, they'll jump in your arms and hug you because you're the first person who didn't tell them, don't feel bad, he's in a better place or she's in a better place. And that, by the way, that comment, don't feel bad, she's in a better place, may be true for the person who died or the dog who died. I can't swear to that. But one thing I can tell you for sure, the griever you're talking to is not in a better place. So the comment about the person or animal who died is not helpful to the griever you're talking to.
And also, too, when you do any communication with someone, be present, absolutely, and give them time. The worst thing is when someone says it on the fly and then they listen to one or two sentences and they're out the door. Oh, that is the worst thing.
Yes, and so if you ever do say, gosh, I can't imagine what this has been like for you, you very well better have some time, and you better not be glancing at your watch, cutting them
right.
off with your nonverbal. I couldn't agree with you more. And while I agree that as the listener you need to be present, one of the traps for all of us is that we grew up in a world that gave us all kinds of wrong information, starting with don't feel bad and replace the loss. And we all got grieve alone. You know, we all got laugh and the whole world laughs with you, cry and you cry alone. If you're going to cry, young lady, go to your room or knock off that crying, or I'll give you a reason to cry. So when we're trying to be present in the face, when we're with a griever, we're also subject to all the wrong ideas we all got about dealing with grief. And then they'll say, well, you don't want to burden her with your feelings. You don't want to make her feel bad. But remember what I said. Grieving people need and want an opportunity to talk about what happened and their relationship with a person or dog or cat it happened to. Now, that doesn't mean they necessarily want to talk to you or me 24/7, but if you don't give them an opportunity, then you rob them. And the grieving people start to think they're crazy when you don't mention it. They know you know that your mother died, their mother died, or your dog died. And if you don't mention it, you've robbed them of that communication that would give them a safe ear and heart to talk to.
Because what they do then is they turn into solitude and they go into some remorse place in their own home where they just don't, they'll stop communication. In other words, I didn't like how that felt to me, that communication, so therefore I'm not going to put myself in that position again.
Exactly. And there was a study that came out in 1984, and it's still as valid today as it was then. And it was dealt with grieving people who had experienced the death of someone meaningful to them. And they discovered there were 141 comments that were so common, they almost had cliche status, that you were liable to hear most or all of those comments within 3 days or 72 hours of the death of someone meaningful to you. And I believe it would have the same reality to study if it was only about pets. But what happened is they determined that 85% of the comments the grieving people heard immediately after their loss, they deemed not to be healthy to them. 122 out of 141 comments were found to be not helpful, only 19 helpful. Now, then, in light of what we've just been talking about, is it any wonder that grieving people isolate in the days and weeks immediately following the death of their pet? Okay? And you want to talk about a tragedy. Here's a story I've heard thousands of times, breaks my heart every time. So you have a dog or cat die, and a well-meaning friend or family member the next day shows up at your house with a brand new puppy or kitty that you did not ask for. And a huge percentage of those dogs and cats wind up in the pound getting euthanized. Because imagine if your spouse died, the next day someone brings a guy over for you to date the day after your husband died. And I mean, you would go, are you crazy? And yet people think they're doing a sweet thing, bringing a brand new puppy or kitty to someone whose cat or dog just died, totally unaware of the fact that I must grieve and complete my unique relationship with my pet who died, and that eventually by doing that, I can make a choice whether or not I want to have another pet. But you can't make that choice for me. Replace the loss doesn't work with marriage, it doesn't, and it certainly doesn't work with pet loss.
Let's talk for a second about crying, which I find so vitally important in the grief process, no matter if it's a pet or a human. And so many people will just stifle that, and you could see them. You know, they'll hold the tears inside their eyelids. You know what I mean? I'm sure you've seen that quite a bit. And it's just like,
well,
why can't you let the river flow, you know?
You bet. I've written extensively on that. In fact, on our website, www.griefrecoverymethod.com, in the articles and blogs, I wrote a two-parter years ago called On Crying Part 1 and On Crying Part 2. But it's an interesting phenomenon. When my dog Buddha died, I swear to you, Dr. Jeanette, I don't think there were enough tissues on planet Earth for my tears. And I do grief professionally. I help people 24/7. You can hear the passion in my voice. And when my dog Buddha died, I was like, the door opened, I would cry. If the door closed, I would cry. It was daytime, I'd cry. It was nighttime. Anything could make me cry. And I feel kind of fortunate because I could just let it out. I didn't care who was listening. Can you imagine telling me not to feel sad or bad? That would be you wouldn't want to be the person who said that to me. But what happens is this. people are brutalized, and I'm using that word intentionally, from early childhood on, not to cry. Okay?
Yeah.
Don't feel bad. Here, have a cookie. You'll feel better is the beginning thing a little preschooler gets when their feelings are, don't feel bad. Here, have a cookie. You'll feel better. Of course, the cookie doesn't make the child feel better. It makes the child feel different. But it teaches them that feeling bad or feeling sad is bad. Now, those people you talk about where you see it behind the eyelids, and of course I'm saying this, like I'm doing this all the time, either in person or on the phone, and the other thing is you will see them catch in their throat. You will see them pull it down in their throat. And when that happens, what I know definitely is that they learned very early on, many, many years ago, never to show how they feel. And they're taught, don't show people how you feel. They'll use it against you later, okay? And laughing, the whole world laughs with you. Crying, you cry alone. Listen to that message, which says basically don't cry, don't show your feelings to others. And here's a little stat. By the time a child in our society is 15 years old, they've had more than 23,000 inputs suggesting, A, don't feel bad, and if you do, please don't tell anybody about it. So the idea of holding back tears is amazing. And I want to give you a little story. Many years ago, I was on an hour-long radio interview with a psychologist, and I was in the studio. And so she was sitting on one side of the glass, the host, the therapist, with her headset on. I was sat on the other side, and we did a little opening, 10 or 15 minutes, chatting about grief, and then she opened the phone line. The second call was from a woman named Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, this woman, had a kind of a Middle European accent. And she said, my mom died a year ago, and I haven't been able to cry yet. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, Elizabeth, do you normally cry when something sad happens? And she said, no, I haven't cried since I was 3. I was brought up in Germany, and if we cried in our house, we got spanked. We got in big trouble. Yeah. I said, okay, and we talked a little while, and just a few moments later, I said, Elizabeth, does it make you sad that you haven't been able to cry? And Dr. Jeanette, she burst into tears on the phone. Yeah. I thought the therapist on the other side was going to bite her. She had never seen, and I just did this on the phone. And she saw this trend, and this woman burst into tears. And it was one of the sweetest moments in history, where by just knowing how to talk differently and ask questions differently and not be judgmental, it kind of opened up the floodgates. And it turned out very positive. She came and did some grief recovery work with us and just spectacular. But what I want everyone to understand, while crying can be very, very healthy, an inordinate amount of people have learned not to show their feelings in order to survive, to protect themselves. And even though you and I can say, oh, it's safe, it's okay, it's normal, it's healthy, it's organic, that is not going to undo their lives of having learned to survive by not crying. And here's another truth. I don't care if anyone ever cries, although if you come to my office, all you'll see is cases of tissues. We use more tissues than any organization on the planet. But I am not trying to get people to cry. All I'm ever trying to help people do is tell the truth. Now, usually when it relates to loss, when people tell the truth, they will cry. But I don't care. I would rather have someone tell me the truth and not cry than someone lie to me and cry or lie to themselves. Yeah. They're not lying to me. So we have to be careful to not rank crying as important. What we have to rank as most important is the truth about my grief or loss is the key to everything. And crying is, you know, leaking water from our face is fine. I'm one of the big criers of planet Earth, but I'm clear as a bell that it's not my job to get people to cry. I get them to tell the truth, and from that, a lot of things happen. If there are tears present, fine, but if not, I'm never preoccupied about that. I'm very conscious, though, when people are lying to me. It doesn't feel right, okay? So they can cry and not be truthful, and I don't like it. It scares me.
Well, you know, and you and I are both of about the same age group, the 60 range, and what I find is that really...
Wait a minute, I love you. You just gave me 10 years I don't have.
That's
I'm
right.
72,
so I
appreciate you.
Be happy and take it as a gift. But
your gift to me.
That's right. And, you know, and it's so vitally important because what you really have to look at is that children are raised by their parents and their grandparents. So whatever was going on post-World War II really is all of those traditions and statements and the way they grew up in life is now what's beginning to unravel in our world. And it's a very long process to unravel all of the things that went on with all of that destruction and the way people had to be, and they had to be hard and they had to be strong and they had to be forceful and they had to while all of their insides were just eaten up. Their teeth were decaying like crazy. Their hearts were breaking. They were drinking and doing drugs. I mean, that's what it was. But now we're starting to unravel and saying the heart is more important. And that is key because that is where we are.
I agree, and that's what you're talking about. It's called a multi-generational pass-through of misinformation, and it's, you and I can identify it clear as a bell. You do beautifully in what you just said, but getting people, the change for individuals who are being brought up with misinformation takes a little longer than just someone nicely telling, well, you don't need to think that way anymore. They've got to unravel it individually. And you know what? There's still way too much input from movies, television, books where people are being told don't feel bad and grieve alone and replace the loss. And you also alluded to another one. One of the big myths of the six myths we identify is the myth of being strong or being strong for others. And being strong is strange. Basically, it says don't tell the truth about how you feel. When I'm dealing, I'll have a mother call me because the dog died, and she's concerned about her 5 and 7-year-old being sad about the dog. And what the mother will do, now this mother has been in the house for 5 or 7 years with the dog. Going to be affected by the death of the dog. She obviously will have a relationship with the dog. She may even very much have loved the dog. But when the dog dies, in a strange, convoluted effort to be strong for her children, she doesn't show or talk about how she feels. She hides or masks her feeling in an attempt to be strong for the children. Well, excuse me, what message non-verbally is she sending to the children?
Right.
That she has no feelings and that that's what they should do, because in our second book, which is called When Children Grieve, the opening chapter is called Monkey See, Monkey Do. The children watch the parents. That's what guides them. So if they see the mommy being strong and not telling the truth, and the mommy says, oh, honey, you can cry and you can tell me the truth, the little kid goes, oh, no, I can't. You know, they don't even know why not, because they're, remember, when the younger they are, the more influenced they are about nonverbal communication. Words don't have the same powers yet for them that they might for you and me. So if they see you hiding your feelings, that's what they're going to do. So we give people a choice. The choice is simply this. You can be strong or you can be human. Pick one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't do both. And we always vote for pick human. If you're human in front of your child, you won't hurt them. You're not going to give them a bad idea by having a tear on your face or a crack in your voice and saying, I'm so sad. I love little Butchie. I just miss him so much. I get up and when he doesn't come running in and say, where's the food? My heart feels sad. You can teach your children through your grief, but not by hiding it, but by demonstrating it. And they need verbal and nonverbal communication that are matched up and coherent to each other.
And, you know, let's speak a little bit about what I like to call life events. You can take your pick, put your name, put your label on it, whatever it wants to be. But I can tell you, here after Hurricane Katrina, a lot of people lost everything. I mean, standing on a corner, nothing. You've got no phones, you've got no people, no places, no work, no community, nothing. And all their pets were gone also, and their family members. And now what do you have 10 years later? We have rampant crime. Guess where the crime is about? The kids are now in their late teens, early 20s. Well, of course they are, because they lost things in their childhood. Their parents couldn't equip to take care of them. And then later, the kids are just acting out like crazy. And that's the same thing. If you've lost pets and stuff, now these people, 10 years later, are very, very ill. Cancer is on the rise like nobody's business. all kinds of other issues going on. So we really do need to look at that all around, how pets and our family members coexist and what happens when that coexisting is broken.
You know, again, all I ever want to say to you is amen. You say it so perfectly, and obviously you obviously relate to your own community beautifully. What we did, I'll show you our part. We donated 2,500 hardcover copies of our book, When Children Grieve, to the school districts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas that took in the displaced kids. And when we did our fundraising to be able to afford to do that, we sent out an email. The subject line was, "The children can't park their grief at the classroom door." Basically saying that the administrators and teachers and principals of the schools had to be better equipped in dealing with these displaced kids who lost everything. Pets, a huge loss was the pets. Because for so many children, the pets represent a bond different than they have with their parents. It's an incredible place for them to learn about their feelings. And, of course, they lost their homes. Many of them lost all their toys, all their possessions, lost their friends. They get put into a school district where they don't know anyone. And not all the school children at the new states were welcoming because, you know, kids don't like intruders. You know, they're kind of like adults. They have their own little social circles. And so it's, like you say, life events, lost life events piled one on top of the other on top of the other. And the tragedy is that the parents, who are massive grievers, didn't have the skills, knowledge, or ability to pass on better information about dealing with the grief, because what they had is what they had learned from their parents and grandparents, as you indicated before. They pass on what they know, and that's why we raced those books. It cost us just $2,500 just to ship the books there, plus all the cost of acquiring them. But we're very proud of it, and yet, you know, it probably, sadly, Dr. Jeanette, was a drop in the bucket. We helped as much as we could from a distance. By the way, personally, because I go to dog parks all the time with my dog, I met, especially back there after it happened, an awful lot of people, lovely people here, rescued some of the dogs that were just lost, were not, you know, weren't able to be rehomed there in your community. So I'm very proud of my friends who I know who went to the trouble and expense of rescuing some of the dogs and give them a chance, a new leash on life, so to speak.
And also, too, it's because the parents also had to deal with survival at the same time. So we don't ever, you know, point or judge or put anything on them, because parents, you know, even if the kids were grieving, the parents were just in a whirlwind, too. And we have to keep this in mind now that the world is really changing a lot.
No, you know, I agree with you 100%. And I do a lot of survival-oriented speeches. I was there in Alabama after that big tornado that tore up the place. And I was talking to the rescue workers and all. And my first part of the speech is, I think I'm you, Dr. Jean. I said, look, first order of business in a tragedy of physical nature like a hurricane or a tornado is survival. And survival is food, air, shelter, water, period. Heart, emotional stuff is secondary, as important as it is. And you know, it's the centerpiece of what I do is this emotional thing. But in those kind of tragedies, food, air, shelter, water. So I agree with you again, 100%. I might be your most agreeable interview ever. But now, let's, in a more perfect world, the parents who are indeed struggling with and focused on survival would already have the skills and awareness of grief recovery. So within having to survive and get food and shelter and so on, they would also be able to talk openly at the appropriate times with their children about their grief. Okay? So I you know, all I want to do is educate people. And John and I, my partner John James, our founder and I, we have donated thousands of copies of all five of our books to libraries all over the country, because I don't want anyone ever to make money an issue as to why they can't get better information about dealing with grief. Grief happens over and over. Grief is universal. If you live past the age of five, you're going to have all kinds of losses. You know, we teach our children to read and write and do math so they will survive better, using that word survival again. But grief is inevitable. So we need to teach our children more effective, accurate, truthful ways to deal with the emotions of grief, because grief's going to happen over and over.
You know, and in closing, Russell, let's talk for a little bit on this. And I have noticed this. I'm not sure if it is in other people's areas, but it is definitely in my area, is that the cost of funerals or people just not having large families anymore or knowing a lot of people, what they're doing is I've even spoken to people in the morgue, and they were saying a pet, you know, area and also humans is that people are not even picking up the deceased anymore. They're just leaving them
there.
They're
the remains, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. In fact, interesting enough, we write about that in the book, and there's a chapter in the back of the book written by a dear friend of mine named Derek Cook, who owns the biggest pet cemetery facilities in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. He's the guy with the biggest heart I've ever known. He had us come in and train all the veterinary techs up and down the eastern seaboard, because as you may know, when you take your pet in and the pet is the end of the pet's life, and this is not an anti-vet comment, but a lot of times the vet will administer the shot that ends your pet's life, and the vet leaves the room, and who's left to help you with your grief is the vet tech, the wage worker who works there, because a lot of the vets, sadly, are not very good at grief. And so
right.
We teach all the – everybody will come, but we teach all the technicians so that they will not say, don't feel bad, she's in a better place. They'll be saying, oh, my gosh, your heart must feel so sad. You know, we teach them language. I can't imagine what this is like for you, to make a better bond so that the griever won't feel just tossed aside because they administer a shot and walk out. So this is a very important thing to us. And also, there's a whole other topic we could do some other time about what has happened to the memorials and funerals and the costs in terms of a human death. That's we train a lot of funeral directors in making better memorials and stuff, but that's a subject for a whole other day.
Yeah, because when you leave the vet's office, you got to walk through the waiting room with all the other bouncing pets all around you. You know, when you're in a hospital with a loved one, you kind of go out through a side entrance, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
I've
never heard that voice before. You make a fabulous point there that the environment that you have to exit from the pet's office is not certainly not conducive to how you feel. And except if you happen to go to my vet, now a few blocks from here, right up on the counter in eyesight is a copy of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. But if you notice that my vet is quoted on the back of the book as the book, he's been a vet for 44 years. He said he's never seen anything as helpful as our book for helping people deal with their broken hearts. It's an honor for us that he would, you know, put that comment on our book. But he also has the book there in his place. But you're right, in the hospital, not only that, but you'll have a chaplain coming to see you. You'll have access to social workers and so on. The whole environment and what it does on the other side, it kind of minimizes the emotional impact in a negative way of the death of the pet. It makes a non-event out of it, whereas compared to the death of a human where all this stuff goes on. So you're right again. There's a lot of improvement needed. And what we're working on is the vet's office to have them each have a death education library, have our book and other books to help people get information at a crucial time. Really, I think people should get the information before it's time, so they don't have to, in the emergency, try to learn, you know, even the kind of things you and I are talking about. It's better to know them in advance than try to get them after.
Absolutely. Well, Russell, this has been a wonderful hour. We sped right through. We haven't even taken a glass of water, huh?
Well, what a delight. I appreciate you. I imagine that your audience appreciates you, too. You know, you're so present in listening and presenting what you know, and it's been just a joy for me, so thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Russell, and I appreciate that. Can you share with the listeners some links on how to find out more information about you? That would be great.
Yeah, www.griefrecoverymethod.com. Our books are available there, and forget about the books for the moment. The blog or article section, there's hundreds of articles I've written over the years, including articles about pet loss that you can read, you can download for free. And then you can also go to Amazon or any of the booksellers to access the books. But www.griefrecoverymethod.com. And when if you have someone who's struggling with a not a pet loss, but a death or a divorce, we have grief recovery specialists, certified specialists all over the country. You can go find someone in your community that uses our method to help people deal with death, divorce, and pet loss, okay, so that I just tell you real quickly, I know we have seconds. I got an email from a woman in Thailand yesterday asking any help or support in Thailand for her. She's dealing with grief that's hurting her. And I did a training in Singapore last year. And so I immediately got up my list. I sent her the names of two people from Bangkok, Thailand, who I have helped to have trained. And she got in touch with them. I got an email back. She's meeting with one of them today to still start deal with their broken heart. So I love this incredible golden web around the globe that we're dealing with to help people.
Yes. Well, Russell, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Anytime.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Russell Friedman, he is the Executive Director of the Grief Recovery Institute and co-author of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, which we spoke about today. Please do check out his link on the bottom of today's show page and have a great day.
Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeanettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone or the television remote or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.